elevate knowledge with the goal of personal liberation,
enter into darker ignorance because they, you know, the point is here is that they have, they're cultivating knowledge with the goal of impersonal liberation, right? So that's different from cultivating knowledge for devotional service. That should be noted. So such persons do not receive the shelter of the spiritual shakti unless they perform bhakti. Thus they, absorbed in vidya, enter into a darker region where the atma seems to be destroyed. The jiva does not establish a relation with paramatma in this material world. He cannot be liberated from matter. When a person gives up the variety of qualities found in this world as despicable, he then becomes attached to something without qualities, which creates a great obstacle for the jiva. Right? So now here is that he's giving up the qualities of this world as despicable. Right? So that doesn't... So that's a problem because he takes it that qualities is what is despicable. Right? The point, what we're dealing with, like where you have... what is his name? Maharaj Kulik Shekar. That if we note in his prayer, he's saying, when I'm tasting this nectar of Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, then when I think of mundane sense gratification, I spit at the thought. Does that make sense? So he hasn't given up qualities. He's just distinguishing between something higher and superior and something definitely inferior. Right? This is different from the impersonalists who are just giving up qualities. You know what I'm saying? So when you say that material sense guy is disgusting and this and that, that's fine if it's in connection with something higher. Right? But if you don't have something higher, then if that's disgusting, then the problem is you give up qualities. Does that make sense? So it's very important in your own personal development, in your own prayers for advancement, that you make this distinction. It's not that the material world is bad just because it's bad. No. Material world as it is designed by the Lord, so it runs as good as it can with material energy. But the point is spiritual is so much far superior. Right? Because the material is rasa, but it's inferior. Right? The example is like that of a child playing in the mud and eating the mud. And then, you know, nice sandesh and other such sweets. Is that you would have to be very childish to prefer the mud over actual proper food. Does that make sense? So the idea is that we're not giving up the material world because it's bad. We're giving up the material world because we want to attain to the spiritual world. Does that make sense? Right? Not the... Yes.
Sometimes we think about the quality Sagun Brahman, Nirgun Brahman. They just defeat my rights. We also need to become familiar with those things and be able to think in those terms.
Yes. It means the Sagun Brahman, Nirgun Brahman, because the understanding is what means... If the material world's bad, we're trying to turn it into nirgun, right? But the point is that's not the point of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness, we're conscious of Krishna. So any gunas of this material world are coming from Krishna also. But the point is it's an inferior level. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So the only reason that the technique is used of not wanting something or saying it's bad is because of attachment. So we say the material environment is bad because we're attached to it and we're not attached to the spiritual. Right? But that may in the beginning be something that we use, but it can't be a long-term technique. Because as one advances, it has to be one has a taste for the spiritual. You will not get to the spiritual world by having a distaste for the material. You know what I'm saying? The distaste for the material may get you out of the material, but it won't get you into the spiritual. It's not a qualification at all. Qualification to get into the spiritual world is a taste for the spiritual. So the whole idea is that the giving up of something here is because of the higher taste. That's what Krishna is saying in the Gita. One gives up a lower taste because of a higher taste. But if you just give up the lower taste without the higher taste, then if one's determination is to get that higher taste, that's okay, because you're removing one, but your goal is to get another. Right? But if you're just removing the one and not cultivating the other, then you'll be stuck. Right? Because you've given up taste, but you haven't actually developed spiritual taste. So then that means that will make the heart very hard. You won't be able to relate or identify actually with other living entities and their feelings, their needs, their endeavors. Right? You won't be able to. You know, it'll just all be Maya, because you don't know, you don't have spiritual taste, so you wouldn't know if it is spiritual or not. So to you, is that therefore any kind of qualities of attachment are bad. Does that make sense? So Krishna consciousness is nice, not because Maya is bad. You know what I'm saying? Krishna consciousness is nice because Krishna consciousness is nice. The only reason that we discuss Maya and it's not so great is only because we're attached to Maya. That's all. That's the only reason. Does that make sense? Yes.
Why is it that we say something is bad if we are attached?
Because otherwise, only if it's bad we're willing to give it up.
So we consciously.
Yes. Or, but it's not so much a matter of giving up, it's a matter of attachment. Does that make sense? Means you're only having a discussion or a consideration about something only due to attachment.
If we are not attached, we are not interested. No.
Yes, but then you won't talk about it. If you're not interested, you won't talk about it. But if you're interested, whether it's negative or positive, you will talk about it. Does that make sense? So there's some aspect of it. What aspect? That's another thing. But there's some aspect of it that is important to you. That's why you discuss it. That's why it's a value. That's why it generates emotion. Because if it was something you're not attached to, then you could discuss it without emotion. You know, just very, very neutral and, you know, doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so, you know, it's just like if we ask, so which is better, you know, the 225 millimeter tires, you know, for his car, or, you know, he should get the small ones, the bigger ones. And it's kind of, you would just say, oh, whichever ones are better for whatever you want to use it for. It doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Because to you, you have no interest or attachment in this, so therefore, it's just whatever's proper. You know, you need wider tires, you use it. You don't need them, why have it? You know, what's the big deal? But for someone else, they're attached to it. Well, you know, like this, because that one's nice, but this one, this is that, and that one's so many things, and so they go on, or someone, oh, that's stupid because this one is better, because tires are very important to them. Therefore, there's so much involved in it. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that is because of our attachment, then we have to discuss it. And if need be, we discuss it in a negative light. But that negative light has to be compared to the positive light of Krishna consciousness. Right? Our philosophy is not to bash the material world and leave it at that. Because the point is if we have nothing to do with the material world, why even bother bashing it? Right? But because we have that attached to the material world, therefore we discuss on these terms. But because it's easier for us to relate to that negative kind of concept because of our impersonal mentality. Therefore, we take it as actually it's a very prominent element of Krishna consciousness. Right? So it's just like in the material world, I'm materially attached, so I can be materially grumpy all day. So I can dovetail that and be spiritually grumpy all day. Because everybody's doing something wrong. Right? But the whole point is that it's not a matter, the Krishna consciousness, if you're conscious of Krishna, then you're very happy. It's very uplifting. It's very enlightening. So we're reading about the Samkirtan. It gives Anandam Buddhivardhanam. All bliss comes from there. Right? You know. And that taste is also coming from there. Does that make sense? So the happiness, the taste, that dynamic, it's all coming from there. So it's all very nice. So there's no problem. Does that make sense? So our inspiration for something being good shouldn't be that something else is bad. Right? That means we use that, like in the political field, vote for this one because the other guy's bad. No, it should be they vote for you because you're good. Like that. In this material world, everybody's bad, right? There's something wrong. If you're not bad, why are you here? Right? This is, you know, it's like in the jail. Everybody's bad, right? They've done something wrong. You know, that's the point. So, therefore, that concept, it's a very important concept. He then becomes attached to something with the... Okay, when a person gives up the variety of qualities found in this world as despicable, he then becomes attached to something without qualities, which creates a great obstacle for the jiva. Because this idea is that material world's bad, so therefore he becomes attached to the concept that there's something without qualities that's better. So the whole point is this is bad because that's better. Right? Not that this is bad and that better doesn't have this badness. You understand? So in other words, the idea that I'll go back to Godhead, I won't suffer in the material world, that's not actually enough to get you into the spiritual world. Right? Because you have to be in the spiritual world because you like the spiritual world, not that you don't like the material world. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. It's just like, okay, you have a person and you say, okay, and let us say, you're going to be with one person and you don't like that person. But to not be with that person, you're going to be with another person. That's the only way you can do it. So then, when that other person asks you, oh, how is it, why is it you're here with me? Oh, because I'm here with you because to be away from that person, I have to be with you. Right? Now, will that person be actually... think, oh wow, that's great, you know, this is going to be a great relationship here. Does that make sense? So in other words, the point of not being attracted to the material world because of its faults and wanting to get away from that remains. That's not the problem. The problem is if you're not simultaneously cultivating the idea to get into the spiritual world because of the qualities there that you appreciate. Does that make sense? Yeah? So that's the whole thing, is something's bad because there's something better. If there's bad, that means there's good. So good should be appreciated for its goodness, rather than just bad is not appreciated. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because if you just don't like bad, it doesn't actually make you a good person. You're not a bad person, but it doesn't make you a good person. Right? There's this idea just as it's automatic, but it's not. Spiritual is a different relationship, a different concept. So therefore, you have to cultivate that appreciation of the spiritual world. Right? That's why Prabhupada has given us, you know, the Krishna book. Right? Why we read these stories, because we can appreciate these pastimes and the qualities and the rasa that's going on there. So we can see is that rasa is superior, the rasa that goes on here is inferior. Therefore, why shouldn't we take that? Right? The jiva's nature is that. That's eternal rasa. That's in line with our nature. Right? While here, then it's temporary rasa. It doesn't actually fit our nature. Therefore, this is given up for that. Does that make sense? Yes.
Does this attraction and attachment to material realm become less only understanding how spiritual is better or actually developing higher taste?
Means, how do you say? As means, as you understand, it makes it the material not as strong. There'll be doubts about it. Doesn't mean you won't be attached and continue to interact with it. It just means that it won't have that same commitment that was there when you thought the material was all in all. Right? There'll be some doubt. So one will deal with it, but one not with the same conviction. But it, from knowledge, then you can get to the devotion. Right? Because this knowledge about the spiritual realm, therefore, by hearing about that knowledge, you can get attracted to that spiritual realm. Being attracted to it, that can develop into a need. Right? So that will then give you that complete spiritual endeavor. Does that make sense? But unless the field is understood, because it means without a field of activity, there's no action. Right? So once the field of activity is there, then there can be the attraction and attachment to the facilities of that environment. Right? Does that make sense?
I learned from one Ayurvedic doctor that you invest prana in something, some activities, day by day, month by month, year by year, you become naturally attached to it, whatever may be, spiritual activities or material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Point is whatever by the work of karma, whatever you do, any action you do, it creates a seed to do it again. Does that make sense? So therefore, if you do something spiritual, it creates the desire to do something spiritual again. But if you do anything material, it creates the desire to do the material again. Right? So at some point you have to develop the seeds of I don't means you're cultivating the spiritual, but the material is there, so those seeds are going to come up and fructify again. So then you have to develop that activity that I don't want to be involved in. You could be, in other words, there's a situation in which a previous activity's opportunity is manifest again. Right? A material activity you've done, it creates the desire to do it again. That situation comes up again in which you now can do it again. You have to decide, I'm not doing this. You understand? That will create the seed to not get involved in that material activity. Though the seeds of wanting to do it are still there, but you've generated the ones of, I don't want to be involved in it. Right? So if you keep that practice up, then eventually those will cut all the ones for, because you're doing karma, there's only a limited amount of action that has been done. So it can only give you results for a certain length of time before it runs out. So if you're determined to not be involved with it at some point, then the situations in which you could be distracted are gone. You know what I'm saying? You're in those situations, but it's not. There's no desire to be involved in it. Does that make sense?
We have no spiritual power to counteract karma without enthusiasm for activities and spiritual practice.
Yes. Means that the point is that means we have to look at it like this. The jiva is very small, right? 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. So it's practically you can't even see it. The material energy is 1/4 of the cosmic manifestation. So if you compare those two, then it's kind of like obvious who wins, right? But the spiritual world is 3/4, and also. What it is in the material world that we're attached to is not the dead matter itself. It's the illusion that it's something special for us. So therefore, if you have even a small candle, it will get rid of all the darkness in a very large room. You know what I'm saying? So the only way to get rid of the seeds of karma is through devotional service. There isn't another way. But that devotional service is based on understanding. Right? Because if you can't tell the difference between spiritual and material, how do you know you're doing spiritual activities? So you can't be attracted to them. You know what I'm saying? Because if you don't know, it's not called devotional service. It's called agyata sukriti. Right? You know it's devotional service, then you get the benefit of devotional service. And if you don't know, then it's agyata sukriti. Right? Beneficial, but it's not. It doesn't develop bhakti. You know what I'm saying? It develops an environment in which that faith for bhakti can arise, but it itself doesn't develop that devotion. Does that make sense? So, in other words, you're only going to conquer over material desire through practice of devotional service. That's what it means. But that's just the mechanics of it. So, when there's devotional service, then you don't want to do that activity because you want to be engaged in devotional service. So therefore, then you stop doing that activity because the desire to not do that activity so you can be engaged in devotional service, that starts to develop. That gives you results.
So we do it consciously?
If you don't do it consciously, how else would it work? You know what I'm saying? You can only do something unconsciously that gives you a result if you're practiced at it. Like you can brush your teeth without thinking. Right? That's only because you've brushed your teeth consciously for a long time. So without consciousness, then there will develop no habit like that.
But then can it become like it's really what you want, desire, whether you engage in these activities which give you pleasure or give you nutrition.
So is that a problem?
It's just will.
That's why our movement is called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's not the International Society for a whole lot of really difficult rules for malechas and yamanas to follow, but they're going to follow it anyway because it's good for them. Like that. Plus, it would be very hard to say all that, you know, unless you could, you know, get all the letters together and like that, you know, shorten it down to, yes, the acronym for our society is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, you know, like that, and that means all things like that. So it's not like that. All it is change your consciousness. That's all our philosophy is. Just stop being attached to the material energy, be attached to Krishna. That's all. That's all you have to do. The gopis did it in a second. Right, Maharaj Katvanga did it in a second. Right, the wives of the yogic Brahmins did it in a second. That is what Krishna in the Gita recommends as the best process, because that's all you have to do. Is just do that.
Then why we are not pure devotees
immediately? Because we generally tend to go for the other options. Krishna says, if you can't do that, then follow the rules of sadhana bhakti. Right. So that will mean you'll be absorbed in the deity worship and the Sankirtan and preaching, and that's it. There won't be anything else. There's no real social considerations other than basic etiquette between devotees, and your whole social life is the whole temple function and festivals and like that. Krishna said, if you can't do that, then you start to work for him. Then we introduce Varnashram, right? But Naishkarmya. If you can't do that, then it's Sakam. Right, Varnashram.
If you can, what do you don't?
If you can't. Because the point is if you can surrender like that, like the gopis did, why don't you do it right now? That would be a lot better. I mean, just think of this. If you go back now, you can go back, take darshan and the deities, you know, from the viewpoint of pure unalloyed devotion, you know, it's worth it. So you just have to do it, right? Isn't that what the ad says? Right?
You said that it's not that we can't, we don't want.
That's the whole point. It can be done, but the jiva, by his attachments, won't. So that's as good as can't.
I understand.
Right? Because it's all on desire. The jiva that can do that, then it works. Those who can't, who don't have the desire, then they can't do that activity. Because only if there's desire can there be action. Right? When desire matures to need, there's action. Does that make sense? Like you tell someone, okay, do this, you should do this. They don't have any interest, so they don't want to do it. It's a nice devotional activity they should do. You say, okay, if you don't do this, you're going to get in trouble. Now, they have a need to not get in trouble, therefore they do the activity. But it's not that the activity itself is important to them. The need is, their need is to stay out of trouble. So hopefully by practicing that long enough, they'll start to see the benefits of the devotional activity. Right? That's why it says if you do this, then you go to hell. And so people don't want to do that. Right? Because they don't want to go to hell. But they don't actually want to do the proper activity. But they only do it because they don't want to go to hell. But the whole idea is that the soul should want to do uplifting activities. That should be their inspiration. And of all uplifting activities, Krishna consciousness is the best activity. That's what they should be focused on. So all it is you're adjusting your attachment from the material to the spiritual. That's why this point is being made by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is that if you give up the variety of qualities in this world out of repulsion, then the problem is you become attached to something that has no qualities. Then, if you're attached to something with no qualities, how you'll get attached to something with qualities? Because your idea is, you know, advanced is no qualities. Is detachment. No, advanced is attachment, but to the spiritual. Right? But to go from material attachment to spiritual attachment, there must be that moment of material detachment. Right? But it has to be that the cause of that detachment is spiritual attachment. Otherwise, if it's simply repulsion of the material, then that itself won't actually be useful in spiritual life. Because then you have rejected qualities without accepting a higher quality.
And
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Not accepting higher qualities due to envy or what?
Not accepting. In the case of the impersonalists, then it would be envy. Because they want to remain as God. They want to give up the material world but remain as the controller and enjoyer. Like that. And for us, it's possibly the same, basically the same thing. It's not necessarily a philosophy or so focused, but it's the idea is that if I give up something, means we have to maintain an identity to function as an individual. So then the identity somehow, I don't get involved in this. But unless I get involved in something positive, then you're going to be acting without, you're going to be acting in a very kind of like dry environment because there is no qualities. You know, so your identity changes. So that identity is not very useful for devotional service. You know what I'm saying? So the point is not that one doesn't get detached from the material energy, but one gets detached by becoming attached to the spiritual. That's why it says you have to cultivate knowledge and ignorance side by side. Right? Those who cultivate just ignorance, then they get materially absorbed. Those who cultivate just the spiritual, they never actually get out of the material world because it's just sentimental. So they have to do them both at once so they actually understand the material and give that up for the spiritual. Right? Otherwise, the spiritual is nice, but you don't make any distinction. Does that make sense? Like that. So you have to make distinction that you specifically like Krishna and his devotees in Braj better than anything else. Right? They're people. You want to be with them. It's got to be that you want to be with them, not because they're not going to let you into Brudge because you don't like it here in the material world, right? It's not a, you know, shelter for homeless, you know, how you say souls, you know, that's all, you know. So it's not a welfare organization, right? Like that. That's called the Brahman. That will give shelter to all kinds of homeless souls, like that. Because it is the reflection of qualities, but no one knows that that's what it is. So that's, even on Krishna's part, is a trick. Even the impersonalists think, I'm attached to this nirguna Brahman. Is that they think it has no qualities, but it is the effulgence of qualities. Like that, but they don't know that, because they've rejected qualities. So even Krishna, they can't get away from Krishna and his qualities like that. Nobody does. They just think they do. So that's Maya. So that's why they're still in Maya. Therefore, Mayavadis. Yes, yes sir. Yes, sir.
Devotee of Krishna consciousness in the material world. Attachment and detachment are like in a circle, because the farther the detachment from something, it makes more appealing to that object of originally was attached to, and vice versa. That's why the Vaishnava is not after renunciation and the exploitation. So when coming to Krishna consciousness, that means by having accepted the spiritual master, we also may carry the same seeds of some agenda. Accepting the spirit of master is something important, but still I have my previous karmas finished. So when practicing the service and instruction given by Diksha or Siksha Guru, I will accommodate according to my liking the sort of service that I'm doing, because I cannot become instant pure devotee, although Prabhupada say that you do. But let's say for 24 hours. Then, in this place of attachment and detachment to devotional service, different aspects of devotional service, how much I am playing actually with my own interest of surrendering to Guru and Vaishnava, in the sense that always I will be attached to something that I like. And of course, Krishna is in the middle of this, but you explain as dovetailing, right?
Yeah, the whole idea is that because attachment is ultimately what we're trying to get to, I mean spiritual attachment, that full complete attachment to Krishna and nothing else, then working with the principle of attachment is not a problem. So that's why then in the process is whatever one's attached to of this world, whatever's important to you, then you engage that in Krishna's service. It doesn't matter. You know, you were very good, let's say, at economics before and doing all those kind of things in that field. So when it comes to Krishna consciousness, one can engage that field in Krishna's service. Right? If one is a manager, one does that. If one was an artist, one uses that. Whatever was one's ability, like that, you engage it in Krishna's service. So the point is that if that attachment, that form of attachment, but you're connecting it to Krishna, then that attachment is being connected to Krishna or put on Krishna. So that's your aropya, right? Is your attachment is then overlaid on top of something else. It's not necessarily of that quality, but you see it like that. So then it itself is purified. I mean, that whole attachment becomes purified and becomes a process of both your freedom from that attachment and your attachment to Krishna. Because you're doing it for Krishna, therefore you become attached to Krishna. Because you're doing that same activity that for you was an attachment material that had nothing to do with Krishna, that you're doing it for Krishna, now it removes that material attachment. So you become freed from the need for that, but it doesn't mean that you can't comfortably use it for Krishna's service. Does that make sense? In the beginning, it may be that I want to be a manager because I'm attached to management and being in control and all those things. But if you actually do it for Krishna, then you become purified. But because management is a field that works well with your nature, you're comfortable to work within it. But your motive no longer is your need for the facilities or the experience of management that was before was your motive. Now it's simply just to please Krishna. So it transforms. That's why the external, as Prabhupada says, you don't have to change your position. You just have to change the consciousness. You change the consciousness, then it all changes. Does that make sense? Then it all becomes done nicely, you know, for Krishna. And then from that, then you start then being able to move from well-done activities for Krishna of a lower nature to well-done activities for Krishna of a higher nature. Right? Because the idea is that devotional service should be favorable to Krishna. So ultimately it should be activities that Krishna likes. Right? So in the beginning, the favorable is that you're doing it to try to please him, but it's your activity that you want to please him with. But ultimately, it changes to those activities that actually please Krishna. So that's why then the Shastra gives recommendation of activities, but at the same time, is it gives rules and regulations on all activities. Right? Whatever you can do. So that's why sometimes it seems confusing. Is the Shastra saying, oh, if you're going to do this activity, you do it like this. These are all the rules and this and that, and this is how you're going to advance and develop. But at some point it says, but actually better is you don't do this. Right? Just like Manu will give the whole thing that in previous ages, when they could, that the animals could be offered in sacrifice. It gives the whole thing is that this is not violence. Because the animal is being killed according to sacrifice, so it's elevated. So the animal itself and the person doing the sacrifice are both benefited. So there's no violence, because it's according to the rules of Shastra. Right? And then saying that, you know, if any animal is not killed according to Shastra, and that, then that's violence, and you'll get a bad reaction for that. But if it's killed according to Shastra and all that, then there's no reaction. You know, or say, it doesn't say no reaction, it says no sin. Like that. So it'll go on and on and on like this, you know, the benefits of all this and that. But at the end of having said all that, of about 30 verses, then it says, but better than this is if you actually think about it. It says, you know, the origin of, you know, vegetables and the origin of meat. Then you kind of think, well, this is not very good. Right? Because the origin of all meat is from semen and ovum, so it's pretty disgusting. You know, and that's where it all started. So therefore, you know, from that point it's just inferior to vegetables. Right? Then it says, goes on to say, that someone who does 100 ashrameda yagyas, right? And someone who's a vegetarian for 100 years. You know, the same amount of time, they both get the same benefit. Then having said that, then it gives you the point of the reaction of it. Not, means it's said before there's no sin in killing the animal. Because if you're talking to a person who's going to kill animals anyway, then you talk to him about the sin, not the reaction. Because by doing it according to Shastra, there'll be no sin. So he'll do that. You just finesse the reaction part, right? Then at the end, having convinced the person, then you say, but meat is called mamsa or mam saha. Mam, I kill you, and then in the next life, you, saha, can kill me. So the reaction is still left. No sin. You won't go to hell, but it doesn't mean you're not going to be the next horse at the next sacrifice. Like that. A good horse, right, with all good qualities, right, like that, but a horse nonetheless. So then it seems that it's confusing. We say it's contradictory. No, the point is that the Shastras are recommending a vegetarian diet. But for those who can't, then here are the rules about it. That's why in the Vedic culture, you know, if you read about, you know, Agastya Muni, you know, was going and been invited by, you know, I can't remember his name, Vatapi's brother, what was his name?
Ilwala,
you know, for lunch. And so he's feeding him, you know, non-vegetarian stuff. But he's going because he knows that, you know, this Ilwala and his brother have been killing Brahmins by this way. They take Vatapi, and he can take any form. So he takes the form of a ram, and then they cut him up into pieces and cook him. And then the Brahmin eats him. And then having eaten him, then Ilwala has a mantra. He can call his brother out. He'll take his full form again and come busting out of the stomach of the Brahmin, killing him, and then, you know, everything goes on, and they have a good laugh, and then they invite the next Brahmin, like that. So in this way, they keep themselves entertained, right? So like this, so then he eats, you know, Vatapi, but digests them immediately, has a good digestion, right? And so then when he chants the mantra, then the Vatapi's gone. He's not around anymore. So then he stops that whole problem. You know, so we don't think bad, oh, how could they eat meat or anything like that. No, it's a matter of the rules are there. There's no sin if it's done in this way. But it's not the recommended higher platform. Right? Just like the Vedic culture, by being practiced according to Naishkarmi, is higher than Sakam. But if you follow it according to Sakam, it's still progressive. So if you're on that platform of Sakam, then you do that. If you're not on the platform of Nishkan, you follow that. Right? If you don't even need those areas, then why bother with that? You'll just follow Pancharatra. Because then it's just deity worship and chanting and study. It's only those activities directly connected to Vishnu. Right? Means the Vedic means all the activities can be connected to Vishnu, but you might not connect them. So if you don't connect them, you don't get the benefit of connecting them. But the Pancharatric rules, all of it's connected to Vishnu. So whether you're conscious of that or not fully, you still get the benefit of having done service to Krishna. Right? You're worshiping the deity, you don't fully understand, you know, the technicalities of it and all that, but you have faith that this is Krishna, you get the benefit. You know, but if asked to explain how Vishnu Vaikunthapati has now become stone, that maybe you can't do. But it doesn't mean that it still doesn't work. Like that. Or you're taking your bath to go worship the deity, but while you're taking your bath, you're thinking of other things. But you still get the benefit of having come clean to the temple to worship the deity. But in the Vedic, then which then is accommodating your desires beyond Pancharatra. That's the only reason to say, because Pancharatra is Vedic. It's just selected Vedic. Means, in other words, you have the full broad range of all the Vedic activities. Then collecting out of that full broad range all the activities that are directly connected with the deity or in support of that, that's called Pancharatra. It's not that it's a separate system. Because Brahma asked Krishna, you explain to me the essence of the Vedas. So that's Pancharatra. Because that means every activity is connected to Krishna, right, to the deity. So there, whether you're conscious of it or not, you get the benefit. The more you're conscious, the more benefit. But in the Vedic, you have the option, you can connect it or not. So if you connect it, you get that benefit. You don't connect it, you don't get the benefit. So that's why it's not as good a situation as the Pancharatra. So when Prabhupada said that now we need to establish Varnashram, it wasn't that he hadn't established Varnashram. He just had established the essence of it. Right? We had the four ashrams and the Brahminical Varna. That's all you need actually to run. That's Pancharatra. But because devotees had desires beyond just what could be taken care of in the temple lifestyle, therefore Varnashram will take care of that which is beyond the temple lifestyle. You know, you take the temple to your house, but you're having to maintain that. You know, and it's not exactly your maintain. It means your house is a temple, but you're going out and making money isn't technically maintaining a temple. As you're getting money in according to your varna, then you're engaging that in the activities because you've made your house a temple. But a house isn't inherently a temple. It's only because you see that, therefore it's working that way. You don't see it that way, it doesn't work that way. You know, so this idea is that, yeah, you know, 25 years ago, I used to do that. That's nice, you get that credit, but today you're not doing that. Someone can't stand on that, you know. Yeah, I was a temple president 25, great, nice. I'm sure there was so much benefit everyone got, you got, the preaching was nice, but right now, you're not doing bupkas. So therefore, don't sit around and pontificate and tell everybody else how they should run the temple. right? Like that, because it was, you did it, yes, but that was 1970 what? You know? So therefore the idea is that what can be what is direct and not direct, that is what's there. So the Vedic system, though inherently its core is direct, because the jiva doesn't necessarily have the desire, like what Mataji was talking about, doesn't have that desire to be God consciousness, God conscious. Therefore, to still make that non-God conscious lifestyle progressive, the Vedas then have details that will accommodate every aspect of your non-devotional interest. Like that. But the reason that it's there is because all those activities that in your mind are non-devotional are actually inherently devotional to Krishna. Though unless you're conscious of it, you won't get that benefit. Like that. So that's why the system is actually very not well understood. Is because in the same purport, sometimes, well, generally it's different paragraphs, but Prabhupada will talk about the benefit of the Vedic system, but at the same time he'll talk about the Vedic system not being used for Krishna is for us is useless. Because for us, anything not used for Krishna is useless. So what they take is that the Vedic system therefore is useless. And so that leaves us with the modern. But Prabhupada's point is what's not connected to Krishna is useless. So human life begins at Vedic culture. Before that, it's not human life, it's animal life. But it doesn't mean you can't connect animal life to Krishna, right? But it should be understood, one should have the intelligence to discern between animal life connected to Krishna and human life connected to Krishna. To say they're both the same means a lack of discrimination or a lack of information, right? Prabhupada says the poor fund of knowledge. Right? So, therefore, it's a matter of human life not connected to Krishna is a gold chain. An animal life not connected to Krishna is an iron chain. Point is you're bound to the material world. Therefore, we can say all kinds of, you know, choice things about both of them. Right? That's why it's hard to understand this. The Hindus don't understand this because we can speak very strongly against the Vedic paradigm. But that's only if it's not connected to Krishna. If it's connected to Krishna, then one always takes the Vedic. Because if it's connected to Krishna, then automatically that Vedic connected to Krishna is Bhagavat if it's spontaneous, or Pancharatra if it's not. There isn't something else. Right? Vedic connected to Krishna is actually Bhagavat. If we don't actually have that natural spontaneity, then rules are given how to apply that Vedic connected to Krishna, and it's called Pancharatra. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of actually understanding the field. It's like in the devotional service, when in the sixth chapter of Nectar Devotion, then Rupa Goswami is then explaining the 64 items of devotional service that he's gleaned from Sanatana Goswami's Hari Bhakti Vilas and the instructions of Lord Chaitanya. So now, in here, then the general explanation is that's Vaidhi Bhakti. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur very clearly, in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur very clearly say, that's not Vaidhi Bhakti, that's devotional service, that's sadhana bhakti. Now, those 64 items can be done according to Vaidhi or Rag. So that's a separate issue. But the 64, that is sadhana bhakti. So whatever your mentality, the form of it's going to be the same. So in the same way as the Vedic culture, that is the form of the Vaishnav community. Now, depending upon your consciousness, then it's going to be sakam, nishkam, or actual just being done as devotional service. But that's your consciousness. But that's the form of the culture. If you go to Braj, they're following Varanashram. Go to Dwarka, they're following Varanashram. Go to Vaikuntha, they're following it. In Mayapur, they're following it. Navadvip, they're following it. So Ayodhya, they're following. So that's just the culture they follow. You just drop off, you know, a lot of the stuff. Like that. But even if it's not there, then even in Krishna Leela, they're talking about Karmakanda stuff, right? Radharani goes out to worship the sun god, right? now to worship the sun god, you know, and so then one wonders what all these rules are for. So then, now she is a girl, can't directly worship the deity, right? Because it's a public deity. She has to wonder how she can worship. But this is the public deity, so only men can worship. So now she needs a Brahmin. So now who is that Brahmin going to be? By the clever arrangement of let's say, Kundalata and others, it's going to be Krishna. Right? And so he dresses up as a Brahmin, and then Radharani goes there, with, you know, and Kotila and Jatila and everybody's there, and then she's, you know, interacting with this Brahmin, and Jatila's saying, you know, now listen to everything he says, do everything exactly the way he says. And so then, you know, Krishna's having her chant all these mantras from Vatsyayana, right? That, you know, like that. So nobody actually understands what's going on. And she says, I've never heard of those mantras before. And then what do you mean? You know, it's from this Shastra and this and that and stuff like that. So they're going on and having a jolly good time. But why is it? Because you have to worship the devas, and you know the devas can only be worshipped through a male pujari. Then that makes Krishna there. But if the women are liberated, they can do whatever they want, then Radharani, what does she need Krishna for? So all these rules are stemming from the spiritual world. It's the culture they follow, right? It's just like if the wives of the Yajna Brahmins were sitting down and doing the Yajna, would they have been able to get up and come out and give everything to Krishna? No, because their husbands are sitting doing the Yajna. Therefore, they could pick up all the paraphernalia and walk off while he's sitting there, you know, at the fire and give it all to Krishna. So there's a culture there. It's the way Krishna likes it to unfold. So that's why it's there. But it's in its pure state. So the pure state is the Bhagavat culture. But the form of it is in this Varnashram. So the material Varnashram doesn't have to be followed by someone who's following it in the spiritual world. If in one's Swarup, one is following the culture there. That's why you don't have to follow it here. But someone who's not following it there can't give up the rules here. It means you have to be following it. Some form has to be followed. It's just a matter, is it here or there? Right? And so those who are there don't have to follow it here, but for preaching they will. You know, like that. Is that okay? Like that. That's nice. Is that clear? All these things? Like that. It's very important to be able to understand the actual context in which we deal, because you have something that's not inherently good or bad. Right? What are you saying? Like ingredients for the kitchen. You have rice, you have dal, you have sabji. They're not inherently good or bad. Right? You cook it for your, you know, how you say, your karmi restaurant, it's bad. You cook it for Krishna, it's good. So that way is the Vedic rules and all that are just human culture. Now it's just a matter of whether it's connected to Krishna, that makes it good. It's not connected to Krishna, it's bad. Does that make sense? It's very, very simple, but very broad. That's the difficulty. Right? It's not partisan, you know, that's very easy. Oh, we're this, or we're that. No, it's very broad. That's why we can accommodate. Prabhupada can accommodate. You know what I'm saying? Prabhupada is there in the kitchen of, what were those things? The butler? No, butler was the place. What were they saying? Whatever it is. This was the Agarwal's house. Right? He has his, you know, vegetables in the same refrigerator that they're keeping all their non-veg stuff. Right? But for Prabhupada, you know, he uses his stuff, they use their stuff. Everybody's got to eat. Right? So eating is the principle. So they're just eating something very inferior, while he is eating something connected to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, then he doesn't get bent out of shape, because it's not about, you know, he doesn't pull in other rules there. In other words, you use those rules that positively connected to Krishna in the situation you're in. So therefore, he doesn't go on those rules of purity and this and that, because there is no option for that. Right? But he still connects to Krishna, because he's going to take his you know bendi and cook it for Krishna. Does that make sense? And he's just going to avoid everything else that's not important. Does that make sense? So this is how the Vaishnavas are very normal people that can work with anybody because they appreciate whatever platform they're functioning at. And they can accommodate that. But it doesn't mean that they would do that or that they would recommend it. You know, it's like when that whole thing with, what was his name? Shivananda? Was it Shivananda? So he was a kid then, and he decided he was going to kill himself. So he wanted $5 or something to buy a gallon of gasoline. I forget what it was. He asked for something ridiculous. And so then all the devotees are saying, oh, he's trying to kill himself and this and that kind of thing. That's what they were worried about. And then Prabhupada says, you know, and after he was discussing, he says, you know, so what do you think? He says, when I heard that, you know, something that was 10 cents or 25 cents, he wanted $5 for, then I knew he was crazy. So the point was that he wanted to kill himself. People think like that sometimes. They feel very depressed, this, that. That's not the problem. The problem is that he's crazy. Now, how do you deal with someone who's crazy and then wants to, you know, kill himself? So that's actually the... Because people, it means you see all the time, you know, Arjuna wants to kill himself, Yudhishthira wants to kill himself. So that kind of thought is, it happens in very emotional state. Then you deal with it in the appropriate emotional way, it goes away. But if the person is crazy, then you got a problem. Right? Then the normal methods don't work. You know? Because Prabhupada says, oh, yeah, they can't kill each other. He says, well, what's the benefit of it? You know, what will you get from it? You know? It's kind of like very just, you know, practical. Other people do the negative opposite reaction, emotional, and then that reinforces their emotion. But you just do it in a different field. Okay, you want to kill yourself like that. Are you sure petrol's the best way? You know, like that. You know, it's like, you know, it's just... You know, so these kind of things, then it kind of makes them think, and then after a while they go, this is stupid, right? Like that. But they have to be a little, they can't be crazy to use these methods. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premanande.
Because the problem is that generally the negatives of the personal generally apply only on the Maya body. The problem, the actual point is impersonalism is one of the things that holds us back in our own devotional service. You know, because devotees will say something is socially bad, but they're only saying it's socially bad, not based on that there's a higher principle to it. It's just that they in their mind considers it bad. So it's the good and bad of the thing itself. It has nothing to do actually with Krishna consciousness. So that's a problem, and so that's why they can't solve it, because then you're dealing with everybody's own personal emotional needs as opposed to those needs connected to Krishna. So there's no common ground, because having a cosmopolitan or, you know, kind of environment, everybody's coming from such different backgrounds that their actual personal viewpoints will be very, very different. And so then if you don't have Krishna consciousness as a common point, you don't have community. You know what I'm saying? People even within the same country or within the same community have divisions, let alone when you're dealing with different continents, you know, like that. So that's the weakness, is that unless Krishna consciousness is the basis, you know, then there's a problem. You know what I'm saying? You know, people don't take care of the cows, so then that's bad. Why is it bad? You know? It's like that. It's got to be connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You know, the women are saying, you know, they're not taking care of them. That's bad. Well, why is it bad? Well, it's unfair. They don't have their rights. You know, they have equal rights. None of this has anything to do with Krishna. Krishna is that Krishna, women are to be protected. detected, how they're supposed to be detected. That's Krishna consciousness. That's not being done because that's not being pushed. There has been zero solutions to the problem. So the problems with the kids not being protected, the problems with the cows not being protected, the women not being protected, you know, like that. No one even says anything about the Brahmins. But it's just a matter of a few years before they start jumping up and down about the old people not being protected. Like that. But there's no solutions. Why? Because they're not dealing with Krishna consciousness. They're just dealing with the entity itself, which has nothing to do with Krishna. So they can't get a solution because each one has a different idea. Right? It's just like, you know, it's just like the women were making a whole stink about they have to be able to do all these things and this and that. They got to do the Artika Prabhupada Samadhi. Why can't they do the Artika and all this? So there's a big thing. So all the women together are rising up and then saying all this. But then when it says, okay, you can do the Artika, then they practically killed each other over who was going to do the Artika. Because then it was like, you know, this one, oh, she's off the wall. But, you know, they didn't mind her getting up there and yelling and screaming. You know, like that. You know, it comes down, okay, which lady can be a guru? Like that. Then the women have the strongest opinions about, you know, this woman should never be a guru. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. Because where's the Krishna consciousness? Where is the element of how it's connected to Krishna? It just sounds good, but they're only saying that because, what, they're Americans? Because they have a bill, you know, their own Bill of Rights or the amendments and, I mean, the Constitution. That's what they're speaking on. They're speaking as Americans. They're not speaking as someone following a religion or a Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? So it's based on that, their own conditioned, you know, nature. That's what it's based on. It has nothing. So it's fine to start from there. You know, okay, the women are suffering, so then they feel bad. So what is the actual standards? What is the Krishna conscious method? Why that's not being applied? Push that, then it's something that everybody can get behind because that's what it says in the Shastra. But they avoid that because they want to get things that they shouldn't be doing. So therefore, you have to leave the Shastra to get it. But in that, then they leave themselves open. They're not protected. So, okay, then, you know, Moscow, they do it. Here and there, they do it. Do the, you know, an Abhishek or this or that. But still, they're not protected. And still, they're not happy. You know what I'm saying? And then a lady in Moscow, if her husband leaves her, she won't be doing yajnas. You know, it's only because he sets it up and makes everything arranged for her, so she can sit there and look pretty and do the yajna. You know what I'm saying? So those kind of things is they have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Though it seems like it. They talk like it is just because it sounds good. Like that. Yes, anybody, any, you know, democratic, free-thinking intellectual would think in this way. But what does that got to do with Krishna? So they've already think that's good. So therefore, you know, so Krishna is good. So therefore, anything I think is good is Krishna conscious. But the mathematical formula doesn't exactly work like that. You know, A equals B equals C means the B actually has to be spiritual. You know what I'm saying? So that's a problem. You know, it's like when the Twin Towers went down, there were some devotees that were really upset that other devotees were saying, ah, it's their karma, they deserve it. You know, come on, you're American, how can you say this? They actually said that, I heard it. You know? You know, it's like, so this is a problem, is that, so these things, though, we're talking about the Mayavadis and this and that, it's easier because it's third party, but actually we have to apply it to ourselves. Like that. So if we take it in direct, you know, it's you know, aimed at first party, then it becomes very difficult. But if we aim at third party, then we can discuss it and not be disturbed. Right?
Can I ask you something? You mentioned about the material world being one quarter. Mm-hmm. And this is something that's always disturbed me, in that material world is supposed to be something very insignificant. Yes, very, very insignificant.
Because
poultry.
Yeah.
And one fourth is a lot of.
Because that's material energy. That's not material consciousness. You understand? You're in this material world for your consciousness. Krishna comes here in the material world, and they have their pastimes, and they have a great time. So you're here because of your material consciousness. So that material consciousness means this dead matter you attribute it to having life and having value. You know what I'm saying? If I bring, let's say, the solid gold Rolex watch and put it down here, and I take this rock and going to bang it, you go, hey, wait. You know why? It's just dead matter. Because you put value to it. Right? It said this pebble and a chunk of gold have actually the same value. You know, basically nothing. But we attribute value to it. Yes. So that illusion, that's what's very great. But at the same time, is its insignificance is it's an illusion. It's like a mirage in the desert. It has no meaning. So it's very insignificant. You understand? So don't confuse the two. Don't confuse the physical dead matter with the illusion that you have about that dead matter. So the insignificance is your illusion about that dead matter. The volume of dead matter is one quarter of the cause of manifestation.
It's still a lot.
But what does it matter if it's a lot? It's just the inferior nature. You're not getting yourself out of dead matter. You're getting yourself out of the illusion that dead matter is something valuable.
Yes, that's right. But it kind of diminishes the value of the spiritual world. If,
why does it?
If there is so much needed, I mean, if such a big part of the whole existence, both spiritual and material, is dedicated to the...
So you work just in gross volumes, that's all. So you're going to have a problem. So let us work on this gross volume. There's 14 planetary systems, okay? All of them except for, and on this planetary system, the Earth planetary system, there are 9 islands, right? So on all the 14 planetary systems, they all follow the Vedic culture today. On all those other 8 Varshas, I mean those other islands, they all follow Vedic culture today. Then on this planet, then there's a portion of it that takes up this Western lifestyle, right? There's maybe, 300 to 500 million people that follow it out of 6 billion. And so by volume, then who should be superior? Right? The Vedic culture. Okay? So, but the problem is we don't follow that. We follow the modern because we think it's more significant. So actually we don't go by volume. We go by whatever we feel like. You know what I'm saying? So if I took this little rock here, and let's say I took a piece of gold half that size and put it next to it and said you can choose whichever one you want, which you're going to take. So you don't work by volume, you work by what you like. So since you like volume, that's important to you, therefore you're considering that the spiritual world is diminished. But the point is if you have a diamond of the same size as a piece of glass, someone with knowledge knows the diamond is valuable. You know what I'm saying? It's just like kids when you take them to the sweet shop, little kids, and tell them, buy any sweet you want. They always pick the biggest sweet, even if it's the cheapest, right? And has the least taste, but they'll always get the biggest. That's just the way they work.
It's still, spiritual world is bigger than the...
No, but the thing is since when is volume what's important?
According to volume, it is bigger, but it's not.
No, but
that
but why does that guy? So it's quality. So so is the diamonds, importance diminished because it's the same size as a piece of glass? You got a plastic bangle and you have a gold bangle. They're the same size. Is the gold bangle diminished?
Like if we have a family, and
you're going by that. 1/10 of the living entities,
yes,
are in the material world. 9/10 are in the spiritual. So that's 1/10. So that helps your proportions any better. So 9 out of 10 jivas go to the spiritual world. Only 1/10 are idiots enough to come here.
For all eternity. Maybe now there is one.
No, it's always that's the proportion. Out of every 10 jivas, 9 decide to go back to Godhead, 1 comes over here. So that's the proportion. So it's only 1/10. But the point is what does it matter? You're trying to increase your value by saying it's okay for me to be stupid and be here because the material world is only, 3 times bigger anyway, so it doesn't really matter I'm here? Or what's the purpose of that? What would be the benefit of that viewpoint? What benefit can you get by thinking like that?
It's not. It's just that I'm a little disconcerted about.
That's what I'm saying. So therefore, volume is very important to you. But more important than volume is quality. You know what I'm saying? Quality is more important than volume, isn't it? So, means the common person thinks by mass. Therefore, if he can find one other person that agrees with him, he thinks everybody thinks like this. But in the Vedic system, you take one person who knows the truth over thousands or millions of people who are speaking untruth. No matter, even if they all concur, they all say the same thing. So, since when are we worried about volume? It's always quality. Does that make sense?
Makes sense, yes. It doesn't remove my worry, though.
But why is it a worry?
It's not a worry, it's just some discomfort.
But why would they create discomfort? What would be the actual cause of the discomfort?
If we have a very nice city where people are very efficient and everything is very pocket, and then it turns out that the quarter of the city is the garbage dump.
Yes, but there's a nice wall around the garbage dump that the garbage dump is never even seen, heard, or smelt of in the rest of the city. So as far as the rest of the city goes, it doesn't have anything to do with it.
It fixes the choices. Yeah, all right. It's better you go out of the garbage dump. Still, why such a big portion for the garbage dump?
Because there's that many idiots like us. That's why. So the thing is then you have to understand that you're in the garbage dump out of your decision. So if it's disconcerting that one quarter is that big, why did you go there?
That's accepted. That's my foolishness. I have to get out.
So what is the relevance of this? Because all it will do is keep you from being enthusiastic to go there. So
it's a very minor point. It's a very minor point. It's just that I think that I don't understand something.
So then what does that mean? Krishna made a mistake here?
My understanding...
Go ahead.
My understanding was... If it were 1/4 of all of his energies, that would mean that Krishna gives 1/4 of his attention to the material world.
No, because it's so minor. It says, what does it take to manage a garbage dump? Hardly any. Krishna says, in the Gita, it's a spark of his splendor. He manages this whole thing, a spark.
So sometimes it says it's 1/4 of his creative energy, so I would... What I was thinking is that it's not 1/4 of all of his energies, it's just one of his millions of energies, and this is 1/4 of that one energy. So that makes it...
But the point is why the need to reduce it to make yourself feel better? It's called the Brahma Samhita, it's the Tripada and the Ekapada. Right? Now we also have to, if it'll make you feel any better, in that 1/4, in the Mahatattva, then we have Mahavishnu who's lying down, who's very large. Right? And then you have the causal ocean there, that's also spiritual, that's the Jamuna. And so then on that, then when he breathes out, then all these universes unlimited, then they sit on top of that water. Like that. So he and that water are much bigger than what's manifest there. You know, and so are you worried about the shell on the outside or what's going on in the inside? Because I think once we calculated that if on the universe, the covering is if the inside of the universe is 1 inch, then the coverings would be from here to Krishna Nagar. So are you worried about that or are you worried about the 1 inch?
It's just that if a state has 1/4 of all of its buildings as a prison houses, then it kind of creates a doubt about whether the laws are very efficient in this country. The thing is,
you don't understand love. You're a manager. But you have to learn, this is a society for learning what is actual relationship and love. So since being a manager and therefore the efficiency of moving around dead matter is so important to you, you would think that you wouldn't be bothered by that it takes up so much space. Because if you actually understood love, then all this doesn't matter. Love means it's voluntary. So it's just the opposite, that God actually allows. It's not that he can't manage it. It's not like it's the devil that is something separate from him. You know, it's not a Christian concept that it's something separate from God. Is he allows the living entities that are so dear to him and he has so much affection for that they want to be separate from him and actually act like him. And he creates a playground for them to enact their so-called trying to be God. And he makes all those arrangements. He takes all those forms, all the energies that are there. He does everything that you want out of his affection for you, with the idea that he'll wait forever for you to get it together and decide, well, this is stupid, and come back to our natural position. Now that's called someone who actually has some very serious affection. And it's out of that he's created this. Does that make sense? So that's what the space is, and plenty of space is given so they stay very far away. Just like, let us say if there was a prison, okay, and you have, you know, you're living on, you know, wherever your house is, and where that wall is, the demarcation, then you have right there is the place, and you can see all the people in their windows leaning out and making faces at you. Would you be happy? Or you'd be happy as that's the demarcation. And then it's many, many, many miles before there's even any building. So you have the spiritual world, you have the whole Brahma Jyoti, and then you have this whole causal ocean and everything like that. And then inside these little, you know, very well, you know, contained little, you know, units of the Hiranyagarbha, then it's a very small place in which 14 planetary systems and everybody does their illusory activities. So wouldn't it be, so therefore it takes up so much space, so it keeps them very far away. So wouldn't that be comforting? Isn't that good arrangement? Getting any better or okay. So that's called good management. But the point is it's affection that makes everything work. Right? State laws are different. That's just efficiency of management. But God's laws are based on the principle of relationship. Right? And for the jiva, they have that voluntary aspect. That's a special kind of affection. It's voluntary, therefore it adds. Right? The main affection is between him and the internal potency, which is just a natural affection. But you can add to that by the jivas. So therefore it's voluntary that you choose either. Does that make sense? Okay. Thank you.